Mics are live.
Okay, we'll start this.
Good afternoon, everyone. We'll start this work session on the Montana-Dakota Utilities rate case. It's case number PU-16-666. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. With me are Commissioners Krasius and Fedorchak, as well as Patrick Fawn and Jerry Leon and Alana Jeff-Kotsako, other staff, and a couple MDU people. And I don't have really any opening comments except to say that this is now Commissioner Krasius's portfolio, but because a fair amount of the case was handled already earlier when it was Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio, she's kind of taking the lead on this one, so I'll turn it over to you. Brian, do you have any opening comments?
No opening comments.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak, it's all yours.
All right. Let's get this done so we can pass this all the portfolio over to BK2. Okay, so we had asked a number of questions after the last work session, or at the last work session. The company provided some answers, and there's a draft order. And then, although I can't exactly, I haven't found it again. I remember seeing last week some other filing from the company relating to some under collection of. Well, I have that one. Under collection of some riders that they wanted to handle as part of this. And so, Jerry, do you want to bring that up first or steer me in the right direction as to what we should be looking at as it relates to that? Because my feeling is I don't want to mix in new things to this now.
We had let them defer their updating of their rider rates till after the rate case came in. And I guess I wasn't expecting to see it in a response to your questions.
Which one is it included in?
The last, after the last blue page.
So that's the numbers are in all of them. Okay, so that's...
Well, the final result, I think they thought that's what we were asking, which I think we were. But the background data or sub-data that goes into arriving at that net number is what's in these exhibits, correct?
The
my concern about that, and I did not realize that was going to be included in here, is has staff had any time to evaluate the numbers that were used to come up with those calculations? Is that the normal course of business?
No, and, you know, there should be monthly numbers that show what all of these add up to be, and so you can see the whole history of the account.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's in here is just the final balances of the accounts.
Right.
And actually, I thought if we wanted to go forward this way, that perhaps they can include it in the compliance filing, and then the parties have the chance to comment on the on the compliance filing as to whether or not it complies with everything that they were thinking of.
Could I throw out another idea? Mm-hmm. What I was thinking, I'd like to get this rate case settled, like finish it. And it seems to me that the calculation of the interim refund doesn't have to be... We could modify the language in here that in our final order that relates to the calculation of the refund to provide a little bit more time for developing that and calculating in some of the other issues like this, the under recovery on the riders, so that we could finish all the issues of the rate case, settle that, and then provide the pathway for the interim refund, but not tie everything up in one big package that's all. Because if we have to do all of that stuff, then we're going to have to wait another couple weeks.
Another possibility would be to just do this with the refund.
Right.
And then they can file their riders individually later, and they'll have a normal review with what's in the deferred accounts being part of that review.
And how is it tied to the refund in your scenario?
I'm thinking the refund would just be a separate issue. You would issue the refunds however we decide to do it, billing credit or some, or whatever it is. But this way, when you announce the rate case, you're announcing the refund too. And then the refund comes, and you announce the refund again and let people know that it's coming, that it's there, that, and how it's going to be there. And it talks about a refund plan in these documents.
But how does that relate to the calculations in your scenario under the riders?
The riders? We would just separate them.
Totally separate.
Yeah, just separate them out of this, and then they can file a normal filing for the rider increase, and we'll treat it like we normally would.
And then staff has a chance to go through it like normally.
Yeah, whoever's assigned to it, and there'd be a notice of opportunity. And
well, in relation to that, do either of you guys have strong feelings?
Well, somehow or another, I'm missing a step here, and I have some questions before I can get to that point even. And then do all these rate cases involve a rider collection update? Then all the rate cases that end up with a settlement, is this normal that you get that far and you have a settlement and then, well, there's a little bit of rounding error or something, a rider collection update?
Well,
let me take one crack at this first year, but all rate cases include analysis and investigation of the riders. And these specifically did because the two rider cases where commission approved them, putting it off to the rate case. Okay, we're not going to file it until after the rate case. So it's always in the rate case. I mean, the issue of whether there should be a rider or whatever is always in the rate case. I'm assuming that the numbers at some point behind all of that was part of this rate case also by staff and the company. Now, when we got to asking the questions and saying, let's see a clearer picture of the impact, this information, which I said in the initial letter, is going to be part of the record. So this information that they produced is part of the record now, and the staff had an opportunity to cross-examine or call witnesses or produce their own information in response or whatever. So I'm assuming that the staff at MDU have investigated these numbers. I don't know that. We can certainly ask them that question. But the way it was teed up was, this is evidence, and if you have a problem with it, you got a right to raise it and ask for a hearing or whatever. So that doesn't mean you have to necessarily wrap it up that way, but I want you to know that the record includes it at this point, and that the issue, in answer to your question, it's always open in a rate case. The staff just, or the intervener just chooses to fight it or not fight it.
I just don't recall that we've ever had, reached a settlement and then getting the last few details ironed out, the rounding things or in this collection update, that's more money than the revenue increase.
Yeah, I recognize
it. It's almost like a shadow second rate increase. We go through a whole case and have a hearing and talk about one thing, and then that's not even, not even half of it. But then I don't know if I'm portraying that correctly, because I guess one thing that really confuses me, so we have a $7.5 million revenue increase in the settlement, and that requires an average residential increase of $4.5 a month. $4.5 for $7.5 million revenue. This is $10 million, and it only raises it another $1.73. Those numbers, it seems like the larger number would have to have a bigger increase than the smaller number. And so since I'm having trouble putting this together, I have to think that there's a lot of ratepayers out there that are not going to understand how this is not just two quick successive rate increases in 1 year.
Exactly. Yeah. And that would be exactly the same if some of the riders stayed, because you'd be getting it in the rider true-up, you'd be getting an increase. And so that problem exists, I think, either way. But I agree, it's confusing. Go ahead, Chair.
I was going to say the riders the under-recoveries were spread out over 2 years rather than one. And so that was the difference. Most of them were, anyway. The under-recoveries were there's 1 year for the one that was, that recovered too much. And I can't remember which one that was, but that one would only be 1 year, and then the rest of them were over a 2 year period. So that would explain the difference between $1.07, $2, and $4.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Why don't we just go through each of the riders and walk through what they said about the recovery in their memo?
Well, there was a summary page.
Well, I'm thinking
at the beginning.
Yeah, but I think it would be helpful to just go through each one. So there's a summary paragraph at the bottom of each one of those.
Mm-hmm. So are you on page two here?
The first page after the blue, responses to work session requests.
Okay.
Never take two sides. Yeah. So each one has a...
So the first page was kind of a summary of how they all added up together.
We're on this.
After the blue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe it's the first blue. It's like five pages in.
You're too far.
I think you might be too far. Each one of these is in. This one, starting this one. It's blue on the
generation rider. That one.
Okay.
So the last paragraph, I think, kind of summarizes it. And we might not have to do this on each one, but walk through that, Jerry. So
it talks about the changes would take place at the time the new rates are implemented. And so I guess that's what we were really talking about here, if that's what we want to do. But so right off the bat, you have to think about, is that what we're going to do?
So hold on here. So the effect of the 10.5 to 9.4 is $656,190 that they overcollected, right?
Well,
during the interim.
Yeah, they had an ROE of 10.5 previously back through 2016.
Yep.
When these rates were balancing. And so they're bringing that down to 9.45%, and that takes $656,000 off of their balance.
So they've already they over-collected that in the interim.
That's what they're saying.
But they under-collected in the tracker, so more than that.
And that's what they're saying here. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen the tracker accounts.
So, yeah. How does the how was it that they undercollected for the generation rider?
As I understand it, they agreed on certain of these riders to implement the new ROE.
Right.
Of 9.4, which ended up being 9.45%. So they went back, because they were accruing at 10.5% before, and so as part of their agreement, they went back and recalculated the balances at 9.45% ROE.
I get that, and that resulted in 656
yeah.
over-collected. But they still, do we know why they under-collected? Where did the under-collection of 1.8 plus 656,000, where did all that come from?
They say in here that it was weather and things like that caused them to sell less than they were expecting when they figured out how much the surcharge would be in the original riders. They didn't sell as much as they thought they were going to, and so they didn't collect as much as they were, so their collection was short, and that's how the normal function
right.
is of that balancing account.
So based on the rules that we previously set when for that generation rider, do we know, remember when they governed how much they were going to collect for that?
Well, we could look back in the cases, but if I'm remembering right, the last year was 2015, in the when it was balanced, and then we delayed the 2016 filing till now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be basically 2016 half of 2017 that we're truing up.
Yeah, I believe so.
And Alana, are you suggesting that you think it's a good idea to do all of that math in one fell swoop and balance it out with the refund?
No, I'm not. I just wanted you to know that you do have this evidence that you can legitimately rely on whichever way you want to go. But if you're looking at it and saying, I need more, and specifically I want advocacy staff to tell me if these numbers are right or wrong, you know, in with a little more time, because I think this was happening pretty quickly when they were getting their response done.
Okay.
You can require that.
And then the proper way to do that would be what?
Well, I think you have a couple different ways, and I think you could work to separate getting the rate case and settlement on the rate case done,
mm-hmm.
And put those off. You know, they'd be subject to this stuff coming up piecemeal. Or you could just say, let's just get the rest of this information in the record and start everything on the same day. I think you're envisioning that the rate case rates and /refund would happen, and then the rest would happen as it's filed and approved.
Yeah, that's kind of what I said earlier.
Yeah, I like that approach.
Now, you leave the existing riders then in effect until they're changed, to some extent anyway.
That's part of what makes it a little hard. It's not impossible, it's just hard, and we're going to need to figure out if everybody's on the same page or if the parties think this is some kind of a, you know, a too big of a change to the settlement or whatever, to make sure we know everybody's on the same page, what's still going, what's not still going.
Does someone have the settlement agreement with them? What did the settlement agreement say regarding the...
No, sorry.
Oh, here.
We would have made it if it wasn't for the coaster.
Right. I thought there was a... Go ahead, Randy, while I'm looking for this.
Well, at what point... How does our staff, or advocacy staff, either one, evaluate these things like, well, you know, sales were down. The Bakken didn't expand as much as we thought it was going to, or contracted more, or the weather wasn't very bad. It seems like
we would have
we're hearing of people wanting to to get money to get people to not turn on their air conditioners. It costs money for people not to use the power, and then it costs, if they buy power, it costs money. And whose responsibility is it to have made those estimates more accurate? Is that the ratepayers, or is that the investors' responsibility to have projected accurately?
Well, the balancing account is supposed to take care of that. If they don't sell what they expected to, either more or less, the revenues they're expecting to collect will be either higher or lower. And so those will go into the balancing account. And then at the end of the period when the tracker runs, you will mix the balancing account into next year's rates to try and zero it using what you think are going to be your sales volumes next year. And that's
if your rider keeps going.
Yeah.
But if your rider's going to stop and move into base rates, then you have to get that grand total net into base rates one way or the other.
By virtue of giving them riders, we've already agreed to. I mean, you're making an argument for not having riders, that they would just
have
this stuff in base rates and not be allowed to kind of have these riders that go up and down over time.
But as far as the original question, the process, and I think Pat was going to answer, but I'll throw this out. I mean, normally what was that tracker? What's the 12-month grand total, and what are we rolling into next year? That comes in as a filing. Staff looks at it and decides if there's any big questions. Because there's a commission approval requirement, there'll be a notice of opportunity on it. So while there was a notice on this rate case that covers every last dollar in MDU that could possibly be at issue, your notice covers that. It did not specifically say, you know, rider such and such, these are the numbers, and this is the over and under collection. You know, I don't think there's a problem with that, but that's the kind of notice that's going to go out. Hi, they filed this rider, they want this, here's these questions, and then you see if there's any comment from anyone, and staff comes in with some kind of an analysis to your informal or perhaps to your hearing.
Have we seen these this far off in previous cases?
Oh, this
if
far there, off.
If the estimates, if there's this much truing up, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because even fuel adjustments are the same concept, and sometimes they're way off, and sometimes they're good.
So the way I'm envisioning this, there would be an interim, there would be a refund that would.
From the interim rates.
Yeah. That would include the money that was over collected for the riders.
No.
Why not? Because that 10.5 to 9.4 is part of the rate case.
Well, I would think that those would have carried forward in the riders.
But so it could include those, and then you
if we do this in one fell swoop, yeah.
Pat, you were nodding.
Well, I think it was part of the settlement that the that rate of return would be reduced on the rate of return on equity in the calculation for those rate base in the riders, and that resulted in a credit to customers. And if you just were to take the settlement by itself, I believe that there would be additional dollars that would go back to customers besides the interim rate refund.
Some would go
unless
back
you,
to the
unless trackers. You were going to apply it to something else. But
if you applied part of the rider settlement thing, the rate of return reduction, to the first refund.
Right.
But if you left the riders, that's the problem. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of footwork that needs to be done to separate them, because you have to figure out with the parties whether the whole rider, meaning return and under collection, is being put off, or just the under collection is being put off.
See, I would envision you would calculate the return, the overcollection of both the rates and the overcollection for the riders, considering the reduced ROE from whatever date those that was started until the date the settlement is signed. And then you would do the filing for the interim, and they would true up everything else and then decide what was undercollected, and that would be a separate issue.
It would be a future rate increase, assuming that they're right.
The rider increase would come separately. And that, to me, wouldn't require any changing of this at all. Nothing in the settlement would need to be changed or tweaked, or all the parties would have to agree to, because they've already agreed to all of that.
Right. I'm talking about making sure we get the order worded correctly. So I'm talking about some footwork involved.
Yep.
But would everyone have agreed had they known the dollar amount?
Well, they didn't agree to a true any numbers on the true ups. There was none of that was part of this settlement that I can see any place that they agreed to, that there was this amount or that amount on the true up of the riders. They agreed to keep some of the riders and allow them to continue having them, so they must understand what the terms of the riders are and how those are going to be implemented and the impact they have potentially on rates and customers.
If that's all built in, then it can all, can't this all just be blocked into the same order? And
well, no, because nobody's analyzed what those actual filings are. Those numbers for the truing up haven't been examined like we normally do.
I don't have this. I can't quote somebody, but in my head, our staff had the opportunity to analyze and respond and file evidence. So I normally would jump to the conclusion, perhaps erroneously, that there was some analysis and acceptance by advocacy staff. Because by putting this in, they had the opportunity to challenge, okay?
Okay.
Or to say, oh, my God, now that I know this, I don't want the settlement anymore. You know, this affects my – so that's an assumption, and it's a big assumption, but I think that's the way it operates. We could certainly ask that.
And this has been here for a couple weeks.
Yeah. You know, and
I'm not why I just feel better about them filing that under the normal course, kind of like Jerry described with the history and being able to see all that laid out. But maybe I'm being nitpicky.
I do, too. If I were voting, I would lean towards holding the whole thing up and getting all of that and then having your wrap-up in one fell swoop. But that's your call.
I have the same uncomfortable feeling about about just wrapping it up, but I also have the same uncomfortable feeling about what's going to be perceived as two different rate increases in just a matter of months. And that this is so substantial, that's, I think, how it'll be perceived. But I want to ask one more question. If this were, whether we did it now or if we waited and analyzed it, if these numbers are all correct and accepted, the additional revenue that's made up, that is needed, for the rider collections, is that going to be distributed among the classes exactly how the settlement proposed to distribute it?
No. I'll have to look, but I think that it's a kilowatt hour charge. It's the same all the way across the board on the riders. And I might be a little bit wrong. There might be something different for the industrials, but I'll have to look.
So it's a straight kilowatt hour charge.
Yeah, it wouldn't be allocated like to this class and this class and this class, like the rate increases are.
Okay.
Jerry, have you calculated what the total? So it's, or maybe one of you guys did, 1.8 minus like 0.9, that was an overcollection. And what's the net or the total undercollection on these trackers?
There was one that was undercollected.
Right.
I'm sorry. There was one that was overcollected. The others were undercollected. And we have a table in here somewhere that
summarizes it all.
Says what they were.
Okay, well, I never really found that table either, and I have, I think, the same question, or at least a very similar one.
Yeah, so it's 1.8 plus 4.1 plus 3.06 minus 0.9. Yeah.
Somehow it never seems to come up to this aggregate amount that they said of 10.265. And so that was my question. I never could make that math come out.
Oh, that's aggregate. That doesn't include the... that doesn't take out the 2.2 million.
There was a number what it all netted to, and I think that was your 1.8 number.
1-time under collection balance of $8 million. That's it.
Right. The
8.062447.
Where are you at?
Page 1 of Exhibit 1.
And it's on, yeah. Patrick, you had some good numbers, or a pretty good analysis of how the numbers landed the way they did. Can you run through that real quick?
Sure. I can tell you that the 10,265,000. Can tell you what that's comprised of. It's 3,060,000 for the environmental rider. It's 2,491,000 for the generation rider. 329,875 for the renewable rider. And 4,384,000 for the transmission rider.
And that totaled the 10.265.
Right.
What was the renewable rider?
The renewable rider?
Yeah. 3 million?
329,875.
Undercollected. That's all before the reduced ROE, though, right?
Correct. Well, it's... Mm-hmm. I didn't subtract any of the reduced ROE numbers.
Yeah, that's assuming the...
And that's the number,
that's pattern. Kind of irrelevant because the reduced ROE changes that.
Yes, that changes the 10...
Million.
Right.
So the under collection balance is 8,662,000. Right?
Right.
Do we have all the information we need to analyze these that staff is comfortable with? These under collections are all accurate and appropriate for collection.
I don't have the.
Would we need more information from the company?
For me to do it, I would have to have the account balances, the tracker accounts, and so I can follow through the whole thing and see it from beginning to end.
I like the idea of asking advocacy staff
to
review and give us their response.
Yeah.
To see if they agree with the numbers.
And then that's what I said was also a possibility, was they can file whatever they want to file under compliance filing, And then the parties can review and comment on whether or not it's right.
Under the compliance filing, not...
Yeah.
If they want to mix all of this in with this, they would propose it in their compliance filing.
So we'd basically approve the terms of the settlement. Because this really doesn't change any of that.
Yeah.
Right.
And then in the compliance filing for the refund?
Well, for all the tariffs, they have to file whatever their tariffs are going to be. It's a whole tariff filing with all
of the
provisions.
But we delay the refund and I'll put all that together.
Everything's in there.
And so they have tariffs that include these riders are in a tariff. And so they would refile those tariffs, too, with what they think the going forward rider rate is. And then the parties would comment on it.
Yeah, we normally get an advocacy staff memo on whether the compliance filing, and then it goes on a commission meeting for approval.
I have a question. Does this imply that normally advocacy would not review the numbers behind riders part of the rate case itself? So whoever basically it's the company that verifies or is the keeper of revenues generated and applied.
Well, the company is the keeper of it, but the staff is going to review it. If it's a rate case, they're going to review it as part of the rate case. They may pick and choose their issues, but there's going to be some overview to decide what those issues are.
Well,
but in a rider case, then staff also reviews it and does a memo and brings it to
the these
mission.
Riders get updated annually?
Well, let me rephrase. Why didn't advocacy catch this
during the
rate case itself?
And we don't know if there was anything to catch.
But yeah, we honestly don't know.
This is a different way of doing this because...
So then... This isn't, as you stated earlier, Alana, that this isn't unusual to have the numbers move up or down because it's an inexact science. And we've seen that a lot of revenue projections related to the Bakken have been off because of the slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't unique. We just saw what the... legislators dealt with. So revenue can and does change. It's not exact. And then you know after the fact what came in and if there's a shortfall. So just trying to get my arms around the process itself in terms of when these things are caught, how often they're caught. But
yeah. Would they have had the numbers for 2016 for the tracker for 2016?
Staff may have. I don't have them. That's my problem.
Yeah. And Jerry, and if you were going to, you'd be testifying and get that in the record here. But someone on staff, I mean, I don't know every step that they took and every piece of paper they looked at, but I am confident that it's a piece of information in the giant pot. And I don't know if they were surprised or not surprised by these numbers or if they researched them. I mean, I think probably when staff first said, when MDU first said, let's put off this annual filing till the rate, because we have a rate case, staff probably was already looking at it
mm-hmm.
to see if that was
that
a good or bad idea or whatever.
That makes sense, yes.
So for sure, for 2015, that was the last year we did it.
Yeah.
That we did it, but then...
It would have been for 2014. Or for up to... When
up
do we?
Up to a certain time. We'd have to review the filing and find out.
All right, so it's probably all fine, but in order to just double make sure and get our comfort level higher, we can ask the advocacy staff to comment on this.
And is that something we ask them to comment on, or we give them an opportunity to comment on? Or
I think Alana sends the questions like she did to the company. Is that what you're envisioning, Alana?
I would think with the compliance filing that staff would review that before they said whether or not it was okay.
And do we also request the interveners to comment on it?
They have the same rights.
Yeah. I'm hearing two things. One is to ask ahead of order. One is to ask at compliance. I don't know which you prefer. And you could just give them the opportunity, but I'm sensing that you would rather, like, know for sure what they think, as opposed to just letting them, you know, say something if they choose to. But you have to decide if it's before the order or if it's part of the compliance.
Yeah, I'd rather. I'm sorry, I was the one that confused that. I would like to do the order, finish up the settlement, and then have that review take place in the compliance filing, and then we can do all of it, all the interim refund minus the under collection all at the same time. So it's one change. I do think that's kind of easier for customers, but...
Wouldn't having the order still waiting expedite the process of getting this done? That everybody wants to get this finalized, get things balanced, to get the onto the new track. It seems like to me probably if we go ahead and approve the order, then the rest of this is just going to drag out. So I guess I'm saying I don't feel real strongly about it, but part of me kind of feels opposite, that we probably would just be better off to just hold up and let them get a chance to do their analysis and make sure there's not something in here in this settlement that we regret then after that analysis is done.
I don't think it could drag too long, mm-hmm. because the company wants the rates, and this compliance filing is how they get them. Effective date, and they want tariff that recover it. On the other hand, I don't have a huge problem of getting the information, asking for it to be expedited, so that your final order covers everything. And of course, that letter would go to everybody, and they certainly have an opportunity to respond, just like they did in this one. They got this one.
Did you say the company's already getting the rates?
Well, that's true. They're getting the too much rates. I understand that. But still, they want to get there.
If it drags out, your interim refund would get bigger.
Yeah.
How long should it take for... What's a reasonable amount of time, I guess, is the right way to ask the question, for advocacy staff and possibly interveners as well as our advisory staff to do an analysis and respond?
If they make a compliance filing, if you're doing it that way, I don't know, within a couple weeks to a month to have the final thing done.
I was going to say 2 weeks. I mean, just to me, they could probably respond within 2 weeks.
So in 2 weeks, we could wrap everything all together at once without being unreasonable, do you think?
I think that's fair. Two weeks.
Assuming the numbers balance out as stated.
Whether you do it before the order or after in a compliance filing, I think 2 weeks is pretty fair.
Our next meeting is on a Friday, June 16th. So certainly by then.
Well, what do you want by then?
What were you suggesting, Randy, that would be done within 2 weeks?
Well, this analysis and such, that to do the compliance filing, or I guess as long as it's only going to be a couple weeks, then it's not getting drug out. And so at that point, I would be, if that is going to be our deadline, and we're going to have what we need, but I don't know how we can issue a deadline like to interveners. I guess we can.
Well, we can say we want your response by blank some reasonable date.
And if they don't, they must not have one.
And your vision is not a compliance filing. Your vision is hold everything until then.
Well, as long as it's that tight of a time frame, I guess it could be a compliance filing, and we could do the order tomorrow. I mean, that's not spread out so terribly long. But it also wouldn't be long to wait. So as long as we're looking at that time frame, I guess I don't care which way.
I guess I made one assumption when I agreed with the 2 weeks, and that my assumption is that the company has everything ready to plop on the desk of the advocacy staff for and file.
They figured all this stuff out.
They just made it up.
So we either do the order with the compliance filing, or the section the second option is to hold and just ask for comments on from advocacy on the information provided by the company on the riders. Is that correct?
Yeah, it seems like a little bit much to just approve the thing tomorrow. And so let the whole thing slide a couple of weeks and give the company a chance to file all the work papers that go with these numbers and then see where we're at.
I like that, Jerry, actually. I think that's good. And I came in gung-ho to get this done. But it feels... Yeah. File the work papers, filed, and you can analyze them.
If it's filed, I can look at it, too.
Right.
Let's make sure we get these notices out, of course. I guess one is kind of almost done here now, but make sure the interveners are aware.
I don't think we would need any notices, would we, if they just filed...
We will. We'll still send a. We'll send a letter because we want to say it's going to be part of the record, including the work papers, not just the response. Would be part of the record when the other person gets to see it. So, for example, if an intervener sees it, like 10 days from now, and wants an opportunity to testify or cross-examine, they're entitled to that. We'll cross that bridge if it happens.
So that could be just something that comes from.
Like I did the other one. Yep.
Yeah.
Brian, are you comfortable with that?
Yes, I am. And it gives us flexibility even at the end of the 2 weeks. If something changes, we can alter or change course if needed. But, yes, I like that approach very much.
And it's really 2.5 weeks. So.
Right. From today it is. 2 weeks and 4 days. All right.
Okay.
I think that's
anything else?
From my perspective.
So we're good. We sent a draft order around.
I don't have any. One other question. Let's talk a bit about the sand and reagent issue. The interim second bottom of page 2 of the letter. Interim increase reflected the inclusion of reagent sand expense, which will be moved to the company's fuel purchase power adjustment. So somebody explain to me how this is being handled. Interim increase included the reagent sand costs, which will be removed when calculating the interim credit. Did you track that, Jerry, or Pat? Can you walk through that?
Well, all we have is this formula, I guess, that we see on this page. On page 3 of the response, it subtracts from interim revenue, approved interim revenue. It subtracts, which would be the interim
from base
collection.
Rates, I think.
It's the interim collection. It subtracts the cost of reagent and sand, and then the net is, they take that net and compare that to the settlement, what was allowed as far as settlement revenue, to calculate a refund to customers.
So, in other words...
They're taking
the cost.
You're getting
less revenue back. By reducing these reagent and sand expense.
Less of a refund.
Less of a refund. But it says that that's how it was spelled out in the settlement.
I didn't see it in the settlement anywhere.
Interim increase reflected the inclusion of sand expense, which as part of the settlement will be moved to the company's 58 fuel.
We had
a power adjustment.
We had a case a while back somewhere for somebody to recover reagent through an adjustment for one of the power plants. I think I need to go back and look at that and see what we got.
So it sounds like this is specifically mentioned in the settlement agreement. If somebody can point to where that is, that would save some time here. Where is it specified? So then, well then, why is it said, why did they say in the letter that it's as part of the settlement? Does anyone know that?
I didn't remember seeing it in the settlement either.
I thought I did, but I cannot find it now.
Well, it's kind of, it's a lot of money that's being subtracted from the refund to customers. So we should understand that better.
Yeah, we will.
Do you want to add that to your questions, Alana?
All right.
Okay. There's a lot of moving parts in all this, so I'm sure it's frustrating for all the parties to deal with our awkwardness, but we're just trying to get our brain around it all. We haven't dealt with it daily like all of the parties have, so.
That's a good point, though. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Okay. Anything else? Staff understands what they, what we're asking for, and we're on the same page.
And so, of course, in concluding that, whether we can have that all prepared and analyzed by that meeting on June 16th, we're going to need it before the morning of the 16th or even late in the afternoon on the 15th. So we're going to need some time to work on it, too. So keep that in mind. Thank you. Anything else?
Nothing for me.
Staff? Mm-mm. Okay, we're concluded. Thank you.